From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, this is Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. And today we have our legal counsel, Bruce Moyer, joining us.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Pretty good. It's good to see you again. You've had a sort of a hiatus.
You've given me a rest the last few weeks. You've had some great guests on your podcast, and real privilege to be with you again.
Thanks a lot, Bruce. What I'd like to start off with today is a comment made on CBS's morning show by Jeff Bezos. He was talking within the context of interplanetary space travel, and I guess that is in sort of recognition of the 50th anniversary of Apollo 11 and landing on the moon. And he spoke about the degree to which an infrastructure has to be created for interplanetary space travel. But then he sort of went off script a bit, and he talked about the infrastructure necessary for the success of Amazon. And he pointed to the fact that the Postal Service had already the infrastructure necessary for Amazon to be successful. What do you make of those comments that about infrastructure and the Postal Service's infrastructure being so important to Amazon?
Well, it is a very, very candid acknowledgement of how Amazon got to become the behemoth they are today. And in talking about space travel and the necessity of logistics and infrastructure to make that happen, what's the name of the company that Bezos owns, the space company, Blue Earth, something like that?
Yeah.
That they are a player in that space. And the way they became such a player in the e-commerce space was by hitching a ride onto the wagon of the Postal Service to get their packages to millions of Americans without, initially at least, building their own infrastructure as they're having to do now to move into space. But at the same time, they are beginning to build their infrastructure here on Earth, displacing their reliance on the Postal Service, which will have tremendous, profound adverse impact upon the Postal Service bottom line.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting that the Postal Service has sort of staked its success, at least recently, on the growth of the small parcel industry, and Amazon takes so much space within that sector of the economy. If they take their packages in-house and perform their own delivery, create their own delivery network, particularly within the low-cost urban and moderate-cost suburban area, leaving just the rural area for the Postal Service, that has significant implications to the Postal Service.
Certainly does, and not only to the Postal Service, but also to the extent that FedEx and UPS are carriers of Amazon's products. It will adversely affect them as well. There are only so many packages and so many channels to deliver them, and which ones you use are going to be the winners.
Yeah, also, there's some data that just came out this week that the internet-based sort of marketing sector has sort of leveled off, that there was only modest growth in online ordering for the last quarter, and whether or not that has implications for everyone playing in this space.
Yeah, the success of Prime Day earlier this week is, I think, intended to try to be an uptick in that dynamic, Bob. The whole displacement of this volume, Amazon's volume, with the Postal Service being the carrier and being picked up instead by Amazon delivering it itself. We all see in our neighborhoods the white vans, many of them unmarked, that are Amazon trucks that are leased trucks, or some of them that have their names on it. But the penetration is certainly growing, and its impact upon the notion of the Postal Service being a 7-day delivery network, and with reliance on Sundays as carrying that to the seventh day, could be impacted down the road as well.
Very good. Thanks, Bruce. Let's pivot a little bit to what happened on Capitol Hill this week. And On Wednesday this week, the Senate held a confirmation hearing on two nominees to the Postal Services Regulatory Commission, the PRC, Postal Regulatory Commission. The Senate heard from nominee Ann Fisher, who formerly worked for Senators Susan Collins, Senator Thad Cochran, Senator Fred Thompson. Additionally, she worked for the Postal Service for a short period of time in the Government Relations Department, and also currently does public relations and external affairs for the Postal Regulatory Commissions. And the second individual nominated that received her hearing this week was Ashley Poling, who worked for Senators John Tester, Heidi Heitkamp, and current ranking member of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, Gary Peters. What is noteworthy, among other things, of this nomination was who introduced each of them at the hearing. Ashley Poling, who is a Democrat, having worked for Tester, Heitkamp, and Peters, was introduced by Congressman Mark Meadows, probably one of the most, if not the most, conservative Republican member of the House of Representatives. And Ann Fisher was introduced by the former chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, Tom Carper, a Democrat. That was a rather interesting sort of introduction of the two new nominees.
A great example of bipartisanship. How it came about, I'm sure, is an interesting story in and of itself. But the manifestation of not only bicameral support with Meadows coming over from the House side, but also bipartisan support for two, I think, excellent candidates. Both Ann Fisher and Ashley Poling are people who are well known to NAPS. Ashley has spoken at NAPS LTS conferences several times in the past, always accessible to not only NAPS, but other stakeholders in the postal community. And Ann Fisher, been around the track many times. Both of these women know the postal world and the issues very well, and are equipped to hit the ground running at the PRC. And as they both directed their attention during their comments to move this 10-year study that the PRC completed in, I think, December of 2017, but has not moved. And as to why, not quite clear, but to finally get that completed and the underlying regulations that would put it into effect, get those transacted in such a way that there's a boost in revenue through the rate increase provided to the Postal Service that should help its fortify its financial situation.
What's also interesting about the two nominations is that if and when they are confirmed, that four out of the five members of the Postal Regulatory Commission will be former staff members of Congress, that you will have Ann Fisher and Ashley Poling as former staff members of the United States Senate, and the current chairman of the PRC, Robert Taub, who used to be staff director of the Postal Subcommittee for John McHugh on the House side, as well as Mike Kubianda, who's the newest member of the PRC, who worked for the House Oversight and Reform Committee under Chairman Adolphus Towns. The only member of the PRC who's sort of not a former congressional staff person is former Vice Chair Mark Acton, comes out of Republican politics in Kentucky.
And has been at the PRC a number of years.
Yes,
as well.
And Mark has been
spoken at the LTS in the past, very well informed, very professional. It's also interesting to note that two of these four congressional veterans that you noted, Bob, Robert Taub and Ann Fisher, are veterans of the 2006 postal reform law that was passed at that time. Robert was working for John McHugh, a real principal in getting that legislation passed. And Ann, as I recall, at that time was working for Senator
Susan Collins.
Susan Collins of Maine. And the two of them played a very important role in the passage of PAEA. And talked a little bit, and talked a little bit about that, in fact, in terms of its accomplishments and its setbacks at the hearing the other day.
Yeah, and during the question, which was posed by Chairman Johnson, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, he asked Ann what did she believe were some of the disadvantages or the problems with the PEA when it was, in retrospect. And she pointed out that the authors of the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act did not anticipate the Great Recession, mm-hmm. which had a dramatic impact on the mail, the use of the mail at that time from 2007 beyond, and also the tremendous reduction in mail volume over the past number of years since the enactment of the legislation.
And its highlight that she pointed to was the certainty that was provided to mailers through a rate cap associated with inflation that could assure rate payers, that is mailers, of dependable rates to the degree that inflation rose or fell.
And Ashley Poling, when sort of looking back at the legislation, identified the pre-funding requirement imposed upon the Postal Service as a major, major burden that the Postal Service was forced to carry that significantly impacted its ability to invest in its own infrastructure and provide service to the American public.
Yeah. There was another really interesting thing, Bob, that Ann Fisher talked about as to something aspirational that she would like to pursue upon becoming a member of the PRC, and that is a nationwide survey of Postal Service customers to better ascertain their views and needs to guide the future of the Postal Service, to assure that that service was responsive, but service was also defined according to the needs of the customer. And she harked back to that 2008 study that that the PRC commissioned that George Mason's University accomplished for it. And Bob, you're so well prepared when as we sat down here today to do this podcast, you just had already pulled out of your files the 2008 report and all the supplementary material that came along with it.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting about the, in addition to the survey that was conducted by the George Mason University operation, looking at the universal service obligation, and at that time, the public's views about what constituted universal service, delivery frequency, who has access to the mailbox. George Mason University also looked at the cost. How much is the universal service obligation worth? And there were three different, in that study that the PRC conducted in 2008, there were two rather interesting estimates of what the value of the universal service obligation was. George Mason University calculated the obligation as being worth $8 billion, $8 billion, that's with a B. IBM was also involved in that calculation, and they estimated it $7 to $8 billion. And the Postal Regulatory Commission internally conducted its own survey, and they sort of lowballed it at around $4.4 billion. So what it shows you is what you assume the universal service obligation is will sort of guide you as to how much it's worth mm-hmm. to the American public.
And those numbers are associated with what? How much it costs to provide universal service in hard-to-reach areas? Where does it begin and end?
What they ask is, how much does this obligation hit profitability of the Postal Service? If it were not required to provide that service, how much more money would the Postal Service be able to earn? Mm-hmm. So if they, according to some folks, if you were not required to deliver to every mailbox in the country, you would not have a certain expense mm-hmm. that's imposed on that. Mm-hmm. When the George Mason University looked at delivery frequency, they were comparing 6 days delivery to not 5 days a week, not 4 days a week, but 3 days a week. So they said, how much more does it cost for the Postal Service to deliver 6 days a week in contrast to 3 days a week? And so that's how that universal service obligation was calculated. But then George Mason also looked at, within a very, very sort of defined group of Americans, who have landlines. They sort of ask them, would you be significantly impacted? How would you be impacted with a reduction in delivery frequency? Mm-hmm. How would you be impacted? Do you feel you would be impacted if you received your mail at centralized mail delivery point rather than at the end of your driveway or at your door? And then it goes on to say, how would you be willing to pay more to get that, what we consider to be part of the universal service obligation?
Well, the degree to which those same questions are used again as a baseline or whether new questions are added, I think that's something that we can anticipate the Postal Regulatory Commission pursuing if Ann Fisher becomes a member of the commission, and she certainly seems to be on her way. Both she and Ashley Poling, I think, received a warm reception from the Postal Oversight Committee on the Senate side the other day, mm-hmm. and we don't have a date, do we, yet for a markup of their confirmations?
No, we think it's going to be next week. Next week, the Senate committee has a business meeting scheduled, and it would be anticipated that Ashley's and Ann's nomination would be considered at that meeting. Whether or not the Senate could put on its running shoes and consider the nominations prior to the beginning of its summer recess is unclear. We should also know there are three Board of Governor nominees pending on the floor of the Senate, one of which that I believe Ron Blum has a hold that's been placed on his nomination. So how Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will handle all these postal nominees, both from the PRC and the Postal Board of Governors, as yet to be seen.
Whether they are consolidated in some kind of package with or without Blum, certainly the Poling-Fisher matchup, being a bipartisan matchup, could carry its own weight right there. But whether it's added to a governor's package, as well as the timing of it, if Congress tries to get out by the end of next week for its August recess, that will leave little time between a Thursday markup of the Poling-Fisher nominations in committee and getting them cleared on the floor, particularly given the length of what they call the executive calendar, including nominations of other individuals yet waiting a final confirmation floor vote.
That's true. A couple of other issues that came up during the nomination hearing was the attention made to service standards and the ability of the Postal Service to be held accountable to meeting service standards. For example, Ashley spoke about the Postal Service overstatement of projected savings as the result of certain service reductions. She, in fact, said that the savings were only around 5% of the projected savings for a number of actions. And my sort of memory of the imposition of the post plan was that it may have, in fact, cost the Postal Service money when they imposed post plan, which reduced the hours of operation of individual post offices. So there is tremendous suspicion on the part, at least of these two nominees, as to the postal data and wanting to hold the Postal Service accountable for meeting its obligations to the American public and to the mailing community.
Absolutely, Bob. Ashley Poling certainly has been among the most persistent and articulate proponents of better service standards, embodied both in law through legislation, as well as a greater commitment on the part of the Postal Service in its operations. And I think you're going to see a much greater emphasis by the PRC about standards and its support for inclusion in any kind of postal reform law of the service standard package that Ashley was instrumental in helping to draft, that her boss, Senator Heidi Heitkamp, and Congressman Mark Meadows at that time in the last Congress strongly supported.
Yeah, and one of the other issues, Bruce, that came up is during Mark Meadows' introduction of Ashley, he pointed out specifically and commended Ashley upon her work with Senator Heitkamp on opposing postal policies to close or consolidate postal plants because of the impact of those closings and consolidations on service, particularly to rural communities. And Kristen Sinema, Senator Sinema from Arizona, who was sitting on the panel, was reminded of a trip made to Arizona mail processing plant and the importance of the mail processing plant to servicing rural Arizona.
When you think of service, think of the fact that all politics are local and that service is an issue that concerns both Republicans and Democrats. It does not have a partisan divide, but it's particularly rural lawmakers like Mark Meadows from Western North Carolina, from North Carolina to the upper Plain States, Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, and when she was serving in the Senate, her strong emphasis upon, as a rural area, the impact of service standards upon service and operational delivery times, and the degree to which her analysis of service in North Dakota revealed big declines in operational efficiency and performance caused by the drawback in processing plants and the closure of the operational window.
Okay, Bruce, I think we, on behalf of NAPS, we both can sort of agree and wish Ashley and Ann the best luck in their hopefully quick confirmation by the Senate, and that they will be able to expeditiously consider that 10-year the 10-year look back at the Postal Service's rate setting system and implement it, because the Postal Service's financial condition could very well depend upon quickly addressing the rate setting system.
Absolutely. These are hopefully going to be two women who are on the PRC in short order, and we wish them the best and look forward to continued exemplary performance by them.
Okay, the last issue I just want to touch upon was this week the House of Representatives considered H.R. 748, which is known as the Middle Class Health Benefits Tax Repeal Act. As you might recall, the Affordable Health Care Act included as one of its financing mechanisms a tax that would be imposed upon plans that have excessive benefits, or so-called Cadillac health plans. There's been concern within the federal and postal community that a number of federal employees' health benefits plan over time will sort of run up against that so-called Cadillac tax. So the Federal Postal Coalition sent to the Hill earlier this week a letter supporting the repeal of the Cadillac tax that could have an impact on some FEHBP plans. And I'm happy to report that the House of Representatives passed H.R. 748 by an overwhelming bipartisan vote of 419-6. So with that sort of good news for the time being, I'm going to bid Bruce a great weekend and wish every one of you a great weekend. And we'll talk next week.
Thanks, Bob. Good to be with you.
Take care, Bruce. I'm going to-